This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Jennifer Ludden in Washington, in for Neil Conan. Beyond its religious nature, Christmas has come to symbolize a time of homecoming, a holiday for returning to friends and family. For most of us, the worst that means is braving the long lines in airports or sitting in traffic on the freeway. But for the hundreds of thousands of people who came to this country to escape repressive regimes in their own, homecoming is a more arduous and often more painful experience. In the 8 months since they watched the fall of Baghdad, Iraqi Americans have faced a choice, whether to risk their livelihoods, possibly even their lives, to return to their homeland, or to stay in a country many have called home for decades. Today, we talk about the cost and rewards of return with several Iraqi expatriates who've made the long journey back to Baghdad. Later in this hour, we'll invite you to reminisce about the best toys of your childhood. But now, stories of returning to Iraq. We invite anyone who's faced this prospect with Iraq or Afghanistan or countless other countries to join the conversation. Tell us how you made the decision to return or not. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Or you can email us at totn@npr.org. Our first guest is Azam Alwash. He's director of the Eden Again Project. He spent the summer and fall going back and forth to Iraq to work on wetlands restoration. And he joins us from his sister's home in Amman, Jordan. Welcome to the show, Mr. Alwash.
Merry Christmas, Jennifer.
Merry Christmas. Now, you're in Jordan on your way back home to the U.S. How long were you in Iraq this time?
This time, about a month. The visit before that was about 3.5 months, working from August through early November on, as you said, restoration of the Iraqi marshes.
And as you drove out to Jordan this time, how did it feel?
You know, leaving the marshes, there's a heck of a lot of work to be done. It's a huge amount of work. I work from 7 o'clock in the morning till 10 o'clock at night, and the work seems to never get any smaller. There's always something to do. So I'm leaving with this, there's going to be, when I come back, there's going to be two weeks worth of work that has not been done. So I leave with a heavy heart, but I'm also, of course, looking forward to seeing my two little girls and my wife, whom I have not seen for about a month. And unfortunately, I missed Christmas and I missed the gift opening, but hopefully I'll make it up with 4 days of staying with them and catching up and trying to make up for the month separation this time, and of course the 3.5 months before that.
I'm sure they'll save some presents for you. Tell us about when you first left Iraq. How many years ago was it, and why did you leave?
That was back in 78. I left the country as a result of pressure to join the party. And, at the time there was a lot of pressure on university students to join the party, to join the ranks. And you had the choice of either joining the ranks and having a career or not. And not having a career, I made the third choice, a very hard one at the time, to leave the country and go overseas. United States was obviously a place of destination of choice. Having read about it and having heard about the freedoms, I went to the United States and did my studies there.
Now, obviously, a lot has happened since then, 1978 and now. When you were first thinking of going back this summer, when you got there, did you find what you expected to find? Were there things you were not prepared for? What did it feel like?
Jennifer, for 26 years, I've waited for the day that Saddam falls. So obviously, I've gone there with this anticipation of seeing my homeland for the first time. I have been working on the restoration of the marshes, or I've been trying to put the spotlight on the drying of the marshes, 20,000 square kilometers of it, larger than the Florida Everglades. I've been working on it for about 5 years. I knew that the area was devastated. I knew the area was dried, but I've seen it only from satellite pictures. When I first entered the south from Kuwait, I saw the marshes and I was despondent because really the pictures, you know, when you see it up close and personal, it's totally different than seeing it from remote sensing pictures. It was an incredible feeling having seen this area in its glory, having experienced the generosity of the Marsh Arabs and then comparing it to what I saw in June. I was extremely devastated, but then again, there were signs of hope. I saw a lot of water. I saw that the people were bringing back water to some areas where the water is available. So the homecoming was really a mixed feeling. There was this despondent feeling that the work is incredibly hard, but there was also areas of hope. I saw Baghdad. I saw Basra. Basra is the town that I lived in for the last was back in Iraq, and it was the most beautiful city in Iraq as far as I'm concerned. And then I saw what happened in it for 6 years of wars and negligence, lack of maintenance, and it was worse than Tijuana. Incredible feeling. This sense of poverty, sense of you know, going into a decrepit area and you see it and you see, my gosh, the work is a lot. You know, we knew that the job is hard, but I really did not realize how hard the job is going to be until I saw it up close and personal. When I came back to the United States, I spent about a month and a half talking to my wife, not sleeping a single night, really, truly, for a month and a half. I just turned in bed all night long trying to figure out what is Azzam going to do and what are my choices. I mean, I've had a very good career. I've had a very good run in the United States. It's been a generous country to me. I was able to get my PhD. I had a flourishing career. I'm a principal in a company with about 120 engineers and geologists.
Okay, Mr. Alwash, you know, we're having a bit of trouble with the phone line here. Maybe we'll be able to hook up with you later. We're going to have to let you go at the moment and see if we can fix the phone line. But thank you so much. Have a good holiday if we can't connect again. During the invasion of Iraq, a small unit of Iraqi expatriates traveled north with United States troops. These Free Iraqi forces worked with the civil affairs units to gain local trust and help provide services as the military moved through. Among them was Talib Zangana. He has since returned to his home in Southern California, where I think the phone lines might be better. And Mr. Zangana joins us now from his cousin's house in San Diego. Hello.
Hello.
How are you this morning?
Thank you very much. It's not bad.
Tell us about the circumstances under which you had to leave Iraq, and when was that?
I left California on January 20th, and I came back home July 18th. It took me like 6 months.
But when you first left, what year did you first leave? How old were you?
Oh, when I left Iraq?
Yes.
Oh, I was like 24 years old. That was in 1977.
And that was a hard decision at the time?
Yeah, of course. I had a career there. I was a teacher, and I was like a middle-class family. But for political reason, I had to leave Iraq.
Now, were you at all able to stay in touch with your family still in Iraq during all the years since then?
Yeah, I used to call once a while using different name. Or I used to send letters indirectly to them. I didn't want to, let the government know that I belong to that family because I knew they were going to go after them.
Am I correct in that your family actually told people you had died?
No. My parents, yeah, both of them, they passed away during my exile, and I couldn't see them for the last time.
So when you went back this year, tell us, what was it like to be reunited?
Well, it was a great experience. I will never forget it. And thank God I had the opportunity at last to see them after 28 years. When I entered Baghdad as a victorious, and they didn't know even I was there. Then I sent a message to my brothers to come to Baghdad. Somebody wants to see them. And when they come, they did not recognize me. I did not recognize them, really, because when I left, I was just like a teenager. But now I'm an old man, and they got old, But it was an experience that I never forget. Thank God again that I had the opportunity to see them again.
We're inviting listeners who may be curious about your visits there. Our phone number is 1-800-989-TALK. Ask questions of our guests about Iraq. And we're also looking for Iraqis who may have returned or plan to return to call. Let's hear now from Vahal. He's calling from Boston.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hi there.
Happy holidays.
And you.
I'm an Iraqi Kurd. I wanted to make one comment. Well, before I make my comment, I want to say that unlike Mr. Azam Al-Wash, I haven't returned back. And unlike him, I don't really have a plan of... I have a plan of returning to visit, that's for sure, but I don't have a solid plan of what to do just yet. I will graduate this spring, and I want to go back to sea. But what I wanted to say, the reason for my call is, for the past 7 years that I've been in the U.S., every holiday season, when I greet Iraqis, when I greeted Iraqis, I sent them emails, letters, telephone calls, the postscript was always, may this be the last holiday we celebrate with Saddam Hussein in power. And this past holiday season, my emails to Iraqis were, well, we achieved it. This was a Saddam-free holiday, and it's a great thing, and this new year is going to be the first one with Saddam in custody, so it's a great feeling.
Okay, well, thank you so much for calling.
You're welcome.
Talib Sangana, I'm curious what your impressions were as you prepared to go back into Iraq with the Free Iraq Forces. You must have had some memories, and over the years, I'm wondering if they had what your thought of what it would be like to go back to Iraq was and how that met with reality.
Well, when I decided to volunteer to go back, I thought about it a lot, and I saw the war in 1991 during the liberation of Kuwait. I said, this time I promise I'm not going to watch this on the TV. I'll be in the TV. And since I lived in Iraq and I knew what the Iraqi people are going through, I decided this time I'm going to take a part. I'm going to be part of this liberating Iraq. And I knew Saddam Hussein's days are over. And I wanted to be part of this liberation. I knew we're going to go through the war, and I knew I'm going to face same fire, same hostility. But I decided to go back and to take a part, to be a part of this Liberation Day, and I'm glad I did it.
And when you got there physically, was it what you recalled? What was Baghdad like compared to your memory?
Yeah, I was kind of surprised. When I left Iraq, Baghdad was a city, I would say, like San Diego or L.A. I mean, people, they were very open, happy people, very modern. I mean, we had young people with long hair, with mini jobs for the girls. This time I went back, Baghdad was totally different. This is not the Baghdad that I left 28 years ago. The people are more conservative. The way they dress, the girls, they all they have veils, and most of the guys they have beard, and they look like more involved in religious.
Talib Sangana, we'll hear more about that after our break. Please stay with us. We're talking with Iraqi expatriates about the experience of returning after the fall of Saddam, and we're taking your calls at 800-989-TALK. Or you can email us at totn@npr.org. I'm Jennifer Ludden. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Jennifer Ludden in Washington. We're talking about the experience of returning home with Iraqi expatriates who visited the country after the American invasion. If you have questions about what they saw while there, give us a call at 800-989-TALK. And if you're an immigrant who got a chance to return home after time in exile, we want to hear about that too. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Talib Zangana is on the phone with us from California. He went back with the Free Iraqi Forces this summer. And Mr. Zangana, you were telling us that the people in Baghdad have changed a lot since the time you left quite a few years ago. More conservative now?
Yeah. I was surprised. The people, they changed. And you could see through their eyes a lot of sadness, suspicious. They don't trust nobody. The psychologically, Iraqi people, you could see the damage that Saddam Hussein left behind him and on Iraqi people's eyes.
Warner in Jacksonville, Florida has called in. Hi there, Warner.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I just wanted to say that it's really wonderful to hear the Free Iraqi Forces. I had worked with some of them in Baghdad when I was head of the National Public Health Team with Army Civil Affairs. And these guys showed a lot of courage in coming back during a time of conflict and when there could be reprisals, not just the Free Iraqi Forces, but also some of the other expatriates who came back, like physicians, pharmacists, people like that who came back to make sure that the people of Iraq had no interruption in their services. And you didn't hear about epidemics. You didn't hear about major problems with hospitals and so forth after the first few weeks. And I think that's a testimonial to everybody's dedication and courage.
Well, thank you so much for calling.
Well, thank you very much.
We also have a call from Moyd, I think I'm saying that right, in Orange County, California. I understand you've gone back to Iraq as well?
Yes, I did. I went back in September after 20 years of leaving it. And we bid on jobs from here in northern Iraq, and actually were successful in getting a contract to design a few bridges in the north. And I went there in September, came back in November, and we're continuing to complete the documents and going back in January.
For how long?
We always plan on 2 months at a time, but if we have to stay longer or shorter, we will deal with that at a time.
And do you have a lot of friends who think this is a great thing, or do they think you're crazy?
I have both, actually. I have friends who think, why go in a disaster area or risk everything to go there? And I have friends who commend this sort of thing. But it seems that, the security is what you call here location, location, location. It's security, security, security. And if that is maintained, secure areas for people to work, I think even the Iraqis are willing to work themselves. They're really looking for jobs, and at the moment there's not much being created. That is some problem that I face in trying to convince our people that we're there to help them. That is the problem that I face.
Thanks for calling.
Jennifer, if I may add...
Please, Mr. Zangana.
Yeah, same thing happened to me when I volunteered to go to war. Some of my friends, American friends, they thought I must be crazy because I have my own business, I have two beautiful kids, and I have my own house. I mean, I'm good, well established in this country when I left to the war. And living under Saddam's regime, you develop that hatred to that system that exploited Iraqi people for 34 years. And I couldn't live comfort in this country while my people was going through that. I had to do something about it. And again, I'm glad I did it. I'm proud of myself I did it. And nobody can take away this from me. I was part of that liberating Iraq.
So you're making a big sacrifice to leave here and go back to Iraq. I'm curious, in Iraq, did you meet any resentment from people who were there and stayed throughout the Saddam regime?
Yeah, there was mixed feelings. Some majority of Iraqi people, I mean, despite all this negative propaganda that we get from the media, majority of Iraqi people, they appreciate us. They are very glad that we did it, and they thank President Bush for his courageous decision of removing Saddam Hussein. This is no doubt about it. The majority of Iraqi people, they are happy. And my experience, I experienced it. Majority of Iraqi people, they were proud of me. They had beautiful words toward me. And I encountered some resentment from some of Iraqis. They thought we are spies. We are against. We come helping the United States against our homeland. And of course, these people, they were member of Ba'ath Party, and they were spies. I don't care about those. But the majority of Iraqi people, they appreciated our effort and they were thankful.
So they looked at you more as a fellow Iraqi and not as an American.
Right, right. They look at me because I still speak Arabic language fluent, so they couldn't tell I was American unless I had my FIF uniform, which is military uniform. Then they knew I came from the United States. Otherwise, they couldn't tell. I was just Iraqi.
Okay. Thank you very much for speaking with us.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Talib Zangana took part in the Iraqi resistance after fleeing Iraq in 1977. He returned with U.S. troops this summer. With us now is Siham Daywood. She returned to Iraq this past summer to help improve the education system there. And she joins us now from her home in St. Louis, Missouri. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us what it was like going into Baghdad again for the first time. What was your impression of the city?
Well, I had mixed feelings at the beginning. First, when I went there, I felt that I have this kind of moral obligation to support the Iraqis. So when I went there at the beginning, the first sign was, you know, sticking out is the country being deprived. Financially deprived, the people, they looked kind of went through a long term of suffering.
I think you told one of our producers people your age looked a lot older.
They did. They really looked older, and I felt even guilty sometimes for looking healthier and younger than them and for being kind of emotionally more stable. Actually, it was, you know, also I had this great feeling that being able to see everyone, when I look at it, it's not just to see my family. I went there to look, to see everyone and to listen and to support everyone there.
What were your biggest concerns or fears before you went back?
It was the feel that, the feelings that they are not going to accept me. They are not going to trust my real goal from going there, that I'm still, you know, really a great support to everyone there.
And did you meet people who had those concerns about you?
Since I was part of a team that we went there to, if you want me to say this first, you know, to do kind of a rapid survey for the Iraqi school and then to establish this teacher and administrator training. At the beginning, my family for sure, the huge gap that the 24 years created, it was just filled within hours. But with the rest of the Iraqis, if you go and you are with a defined goal and prepared, then the trust will be established. But I met people there who they kept asking, why you're here? Are you going really to understand our needs now after the long years you've been away? Hmm. This is how, you know, I face some people like that.
We're inviting listeners to join the conversation. Mahmoud is called from Ypsilanti, Michigan. Hi there. Mahmoud, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, welcome. Jen. You're on the air.
Hi, Jen.
Hello.
Me.
Thanks. What would you like to ask about or comment on?
Well, I just wanted to add a little comments about my fellow predecessor on the show, about the feelings and emotions that one gets upon returning home, whether it's after a long-term exile or just a journey overseas. In my case, it wasn't any exile or any pressure to leave my hometown, Niger.
Niger in West Africa?
Yes, that mm-hmm. is correct, as opposed to Niger.
Mm-hmm.
I came in here back in 96, pretty much to go to school here, and I stayed here until I graduated from school, which took me about 4 years. And I hadn't gone home until the year after, and that was about 5 years. I decided to go back and seen family members and loved ones and friends and my country. And so it was very indescribable feeling and emotions, and it's very overwhelming to get back to the kind of things that you used to do before and get back used to the food that you used to eat and all those things. So I feared all the people that have preceded me on the show, and I can relate to them, and I can feel what their emotions are. Because it's very difficult, and at the same time, it makes one just come out of it stronger and very satisfied. So, again, in my case, it wasn't any, you know, pressure from my part to leave my country. Mm-hmm. I did it on my own, and I went back on my own. So.
And it was still there for you as home. That's great. Well, yes. Thank you for calling, Mahmoud.
You're welcome. Thank
you. Siham Daywood, I understand there are, for people who choose to go back home for longer periods of time, it can be quite costly. You've lost a job over this.
Yes. And because I asked for leave time, and then the project required that I stay longer, and then when you sign contract and you go there with this kind of goal that you are going there, and you forget everything. Your main thing is to keep working if you see that you are really making an impact. So, you know, I lost my job. So this is one of the things that I feel I've been always supportive, and I've been motivating all the Iraqis, the people who left Iraq long ago, the Iraqi Americans or Canadians, to go back and support at this time, because this is the time where the country needs the support, not when they are on their feet. This is our expression. But unfortunately, there's the other, you know, the downside of it, that they need to make sure that they do everything in a legal way, that they have a long-term job, that either there or here, because all of us, we are established here, and we have our, you know, to support our families financially. So this is an issue that we need to be given attention.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Jason in Olathe, Kansas, has called in. Hi there, Jason.
Hi. Yeah, I have a question. Maybe someone could answer me.
You need to turn down your radio, I believe.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Bit of a delay there. What's your question?
My question, there is about 25,000 Iraqis all over the place, including in America, with advanced degrees. I am one of them. And we have 20 years experience. I don't know if the Iraqi situation right now could observe our experience to help them accelerate the reconstruction. There is a lot of engineers and doctors, a lot of expertise. Most of them, well, born in there like myself, left 22 years ago. There is any room for those type of segment to help Iraq to accelerate the reconstruction?
Siham Daywood, you've been there. Did you feel a big need for and a desire for educated Iraqis to come back and help?
Yes, there's a great need, because the Iraqis been isolated for almost over 20 years from the new research, the new what's going on in the rest of the world, and they couldn't have any access even to an internet or a computer. So there's a great need, but unfortunately, it's not easy just to get the appropriate position to be in the right place. So I think there are many proposals and availability of jobs, but they have to go through the internet, through the USAID in order to submit resumes. And the best way is to join a team that already trained out of the country in order to know the main purpose of why they are going there, and to form a team before going there and start thinking about what to do.
All right. Jason, thanks for calling.
Thank you so much.
Rochelle in Hollywood, Florida has a question. Hi, Rochelle.
Hi, how are you?
Good, and you?
Fine, thank you. Merry Christmas to everybody.
What's your question?
My question was, if the lady has met anybody who is a Saddam supporter, and if so, why would anybody support this man?
Saddam Daywood?
Yes, excuse me. I didn't get the question very well.
Rochelle asked, did you meet anyone in Iraq who still supports Saddam Hussein? And if so, why do they still support him?
Well, the people who really, pampered them, the people who had everything while the rest of the population deprived, those are the people who know that they are not getting the luxury life that they had while he was around. Also, some of them, it's loyalty, because they think some of them, very small percentage, that Saddam represents Iraq, and the United States or the coalition, they are, you know, outsiders. So they are trying to, they feel this way sometimes. Also, the trust is because the security wasn't established immediately. They thought things going to happen over weeks or few months, regardless of the damage, the huge damage. So that's why, you know, the trust wasn't established yet in the coalition.
Ms. Daywood, we have just a few seconds left. When are you going back next?
I'm planning to go back this summer, with God willing.
Okay, good luck.
Thank you very much.
And thank you. Siham Daywood spent the last several months in Iraq helping rebuild the country's education system. She joined us from her home in St. Louis, Missouri. When we come back from the break, we want to hear from you on a different subject. What is the absolute most favorite toy you ever received? Give us a call. Our number is 1-800-989-TALK. I'm Jennifer Ludden. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.